Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's stamps.com. Code program.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Histories of the Unexpected.
He's the famous historical adventurer, Dr. Sam Willis.
And he is Professor Extraordinaire of Early Modern British History at Plymouth University. He is Professor James Daybell. Hello, he.
Hello, you. Are you well, yeah, again?
Very good.
Good. That's what we like to hear.
A bit spooked out.
Ooh, it's almost Halloween. My daughters are so excited about Halloween.
Yeah. So we're doing Halloween today, aren't we?
Halloween, yes.
Halloween. Anyway, where were we? Histories of the Unexpected is the show that demonstrates that everything, even the most unexpected of subjects, has a history.
Like heads, beds and weds. Ponds, fronds and blondes.
Nice. And that everything links together in unexpected ways.
Who knew, for example, that the history of buildings is in fact all about privacy, slighting, ghosts, secrets, power, the Reformation, the Enlightenment, the Industrial Revolution, the French Revolution. It's about World War II, World War I, China, Africa, Venezuela, Nairobi, London, Paris, France. In fact, it's about the history of everything.
It is. We slighting was one of my favourite things. We did that in the history of lean, which is ridiculous.
It was so very good. Slighting is destroying castles.
Yeah, on purpose, but not completely removing them from the landscape. So no. Making it look like so they remain visibly destroyed. Anyway, we do two things. One is that we do the history of things that you didn't expect to have a history. And the other is we take a well-known subject and then we try and come at it from a weird angle. And so today we're going to be doing that. We're going to be doing Halloween.
It's all about love, Halloween. Yeah. In fact, it is. It's totally all about love. People make the mistake to think that Halloween is in fact a pagan festival. You couldn't be further from the truth. No. It is in fact a Christian festival, medieval festival. It was all to do with all those souls that sort of went off to purgatory. And then the Reformation came along, so it's all about the Reformation, and stopped all of that. And then it was reinvented in largely the 1970s and 1980s. But there were certain games that were around the 19th century that people used around Halloween time to tell them who they were going to marry.
Okay.
Would you like to hear some of them?
So it's about games and fate and love.
Games and fate and love. Now, since we're near Christmas, I want to do a plug for a brilliant book that I got a few Christmases ago called The English Year, a month-by-month guide to the nation's customs and festivals from May Day to Mischief Night by a historian called Steve Rowld. It's absolutely incredible. And he's got a series of examples here of games that were played on Halloween. And one of my favourite is a game that involved apples.
What sort of period is it?
We're talking about 19th century here.
Oh, okay.
1825 and beyond. And there was a tradition, a Mrs. Hook of Chumley in Devon, age 70, told me in May 1938, that in her young days it was the custom on all Halloween to pare apples, then whirl the peel three times round your head, and then throw it over your left shoulder to the floor. The letter formed on the floor by the apple peel would be the initial of the future husband or wife. Mrs. Hook assured me that her apple peel always formed the letter J, and she eventually married Jack Hook. And there are various other games that people used, including putting little nuts on a shovel and putting them in the fire. And if the nuts dance together, then you'd be
nut dancing.
You'd be meeting somebody. And if they went apart, then it wouldn't work.
We should do that. We should read the nuts.
Combing your hair in a mirror. At midnight, the person who you are about to marry appears behind you. Did you know that?
No, that's another cool one. What kind of nuts? What kind of peanuts? Just peanuts?
Nuts. Two nuts, it says.
Two nuts.
Two nuts, for example, would be chosen to represent two potential lovers and placed side by side on the fire shovel over the flames of a fire. The future romantic potential for the couple could be gauged by whether the heated nuts jumped apart or drew together.
Right, I want to do that. We're going to do that next. We're going to do a live nut dancing thing for our next...
So Halloween is not all about ghosties and ghoulies. Halloween is, in fact, all about love.
Oh.
I blame Walmart for Halloween.
Okay, I'm going to be going into the realms of fear and terror, which I'm excited about.
Oh, good.
That being what Halloween is about for so many people. You walk down the high street, there are lots of scary-looking masks and things, so I thought we'd look into the history of emotions and terror.
Oh, excellent.
Now, those of you who've been lucky enough to come and see our live show will know that we do talk about this a little bit, and we conduct a little experiment, and we're going to do something similar now. There's this guy called Guillaume Duchesne, who was a scientist. But he could also have been a poet. He talked about the gymnastics of the soul. And he believed that emotions were linked
Lovely phrase.
To specific muscles in the face. And so he went about proving this by electrocuting people in the face and taking photographs.
And we have a picture of his the device that he used electrocute people.
It looks a bit like it's a kind of a bent knitting needle. So it's about as long as a knitting needle, curved at the end with a sort of some kind of conducting material. It looks like a blob of blue tack on the end. He's got two of them, and he is attaching these electrical probes to the face of a bald man.
And it's all wired up to a big wooden box with a cylinder on it, which presumably generates the electric current.
Now, if he wants to electrocute more than one part of the face, or more than two parts of the face, because he's got two hands and each hand has a poker, then he gets an assistant who comes in and then attaches two more probes to this poor man's face. We know that the guy in these experiments had something wrong with the nerves in his face. So although it looks incredibly painful, apparently he wasn't hurt in the creation of this. So we're going to go through this. Now, this is all good fun, and it is a project which was set up by the University of Cambridge, and I would recommend you all go on to it.
Could our listeners play along with us?
Yeah, so if you're near a computer, go on to darwinproject.ac.uk and then click on do the experiment.
Emotion experiment.
So you get a photograph taken by Duchesne, who he believed this photograph with him electrocuting a man's face in a certain way displayed a very specific emotion.
Now, the connection with Darwin, you may be asking yourself. Why is the connection with Darwin? Darwin took this very seriously and used Duchesne's photographs for his own experiments. He invited a group of people round to dinner and then showed them these experiments and asked them to identify what emotions that they showed. So this is what we are going to do right now.
Because it is linked with Halloween and there are some very important scary facial
expressions.
So you go onto darwinproject.ac.uk, University of Cambridge website, and then you click about a third of the way down on the sort of pinky purple button says Start Darwin Emotions. Now you are presented with a photograph. James, describe this photograph.
It is a bald man who has hair down one side, and he looks like he is smiling. His face is like this. That doesn't show very well.
I'm going to go grinning. What I think about emotion, I'm going to say happiness. Okay.
Happy. That's what I'm saying as well.
I'm going to say happy. The answer to that is actually laughter.
Laughter. Well, that would do. Ooh. This takes us to emotion two.
Yeah, and we wanted this one. So
he's looking slightly.
His assistant is doing it this time. This guy with a kind of a weird sort of looks like a Jesuit cap, doesn't it?
He looks quite menacing.
Yeah, he is now attaching probes to the eyebrows of this man, whose entire face of his head has raised about 3 inches.
I'm going to go with surprise.
Surprise or shock.
Well, they're very similar, aren't they?
Yeah, that one.
Surprise and horror?
That one is surprise.
Surprise.
Okay, so the next one. This is when we get a bit Halloween-y. Right. So, in this extraordinary one, he is a man standing behind him with two probes attached to the top of his eyebrows, which is making all of the skin on his face crinkle up. Meanwhile, there's another man who is electrocuting the bottom of his chin. This has made his eyes bulge, his nose kind of, the skin on his nose stretch, and his mouth open in a toothless grimace.
Stan Laurel. Imagine a Stan Laurel face where he's going...
Yeah. And he is clearly...
Shocked.
Shocked or terrified? I'm going to go... terrified.
You probably know what this is, so I'm going to copy you.
Oh, okay. No, I'm actually right. I'm remembering, but that one is terror.
I'm going to go terror, so terrified.
This is the Halloween link. So if you want to actually look at a 19th century scientific explanation of what terror looks like, it's this. The next one, this guy has got probes on his chin and on one eyebrow.
He doesn't look happy. Is he unhappy here?
Yeah.
Sad?
Sad. Let's try sad. And that one is despair and grief.
Oh my word! He looks shocked here, distressed.
So he's got the probes on the bottom of his chin as well, which is opening his mouth. But he's got two probes on the inside of his eyebrows, which is making his face kind of pinch, and all of the muscles stand out on his neck. So that's a bit similar to the other one, which was terror.
Are you sure he wasn't being hurt during these experiments? Because he looks
like he's being hurt.
He looks fright with agony.
Yeah.
Agony, torture, and fright.
That's the answer. It is agony, torture, and fright.
Oh my gosh.
And they're all together. So what Duchenne's doing here is he thinks he's mixing them up. So I know that he's done terror, but agony, torture, and fright all at one. But that is another classic Halloween expression. That's a 19th century view of what fear looked like. Then these ones, let's move on to this next one, which is suffering.
Suffering
number 6, 7, 8. So skip a couple, I think.
Skip a couple, okay.
Yeah. Let's do that. Yeah, this is an interesting one, isn't it?
Which one are we on now?
Number eight. So it's with the man. You can see both of them together. Duchenne's there with one probe onto the right eyebrow. So this is how scientific Duchenne got about it. He's got one electric probe, and he has attached it to the top right eyebrow of this man. And this depicts suffering.
He certainly looks like he's suffering.
Yeah, and then we've got a couple more mixed ones. The next one's really interesting.
It looks a bit like Clint Eastwood.
Does it? This next one, this one here, a different man, different model, big moustache, lovely, lovely thick hair. That's not just grief, that's deep grief.
So, deep grief?
Yeah, he's looking very troubled. He's got a couple of deep lines in his forehead, and he's not being electrocuted, I've just realised.
No.
So this maybe is an actor or someone who has been asked to display deep grief, unless Duchenne has picked him up because he is suffering from deep grief, and then he's taken a photograph of him. I'd love to know the answer. Let's finish with this last one, because this is a common horror image I've actually seen around. So you've got the electrocuting of the chin to open the mouth. You've got probes left and right on his eyebrows. You've got one around the back of the neck, and that one is fright with agony.
Oh, that looks painful.
Anyway, the point here, of course, is that Duchenne believed that emotions, whether they be complex or simple, were linked with specific muscles in the face. And Darwin took Duchenne's experiments, and he actually wrote a book called The Expression of Emotions in Man and Animals, which was after The Origin of the Species. And he managed to prove that this was not actually the case, and that emotions are far more complex than simply just being a way of engaging certain muscles in the face, which is why Halloween is all about Duchenne and Darwin.
Good, good. Halloween is, in fact, all about hair.
Mm.
I think. And this brings us back to the book that we're writing on about the Vikings and the chapter on hair. And Vikings had very distinct hairstyles. And hair was one of the ways in which their foes singled them out as different, as foreign, and as ultimately fearsome. Fearsome and dangerous. And we know that there's a sort of specifically Scandinavian hairstyle. And we know this from a legal code very early on, which refers to the way in which you might save a drowned person. And you would save them if they had a Norse hairstyle, if they were washed ashore, and they would receive a Christian burial. And the cleric Alcuin also wrote to King Athelred of Northumbria in 793, warning him against the pagan Vikings. Are not these the people whose terror threatens us, yet you want to copy their hair? So there's a sort of sense in which the Vikings were identified as fearsome and could be shown because of their hair. There was also fear that they were actually quite well kept, quite well kept, and in fact that they would they were so well kept that when they came over, they would attract all the women, and the women would want to leave and run off with the Vikings. This is in an English chronicle of John of Wallingford, who died in 1258, and he records the coming of attractive Danes in the 10th and 11th centuries, who he considered, and I quote, caused much trouble to the natives of the land, for they were wont, after the fashion of their country, to comb their hair every day, to bathe every Saturday, to change their garments often, and to set off their persons by many frivolous devices. In this matter, they laid siege to the virtue of the married woman and persuaded the daughters, even of the noble, to be their concubines. So fear is all about Viking hair and sexual attractiveness.
It's interesting that, because it also, once we know what people are afraid of in history, then you know what people value.
Yes.
So in that respect, the fear, it's all linked to do with the kind of the fear of the other. It's the fear of being invaded as well. This it comes back to the whole question of invasion. We did a podcast on invasion, didn't we? Just after I'd done my series.
Jacques Lacan and the other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something different and something uncertain. So they're worried about their women running off.
Yes. It's about deep-seated insecurities that you can see throughout history in all manner of ways, where you are demonizing another.
Yeah.
Whether it be Jews during the Second World War and before that, whether it be witches, who are demonized, and in fact, you know, anthropologists argue that that's about the sort of social concerns and anxieties within village society.
The other point about that is there's a classic thing with fear, which I come across with snakes.
Yes.
And I have kids.
Fear and phobias.
Well, phobias, but no, it's the point is that the snake is much more frightened of you than you are of it.
Yes.
But okay, so apply that to the Vikings.
Are you scared of snakes?
Apply that to the Vikings, is my point. So if you got these people saying they're afraid of the Vikings, what the Vikings are attacking, so what's going on from their perspective? Or, you know, what are they afraid of? So they've made this decision to sail across from Scandinavia to England. You know, are they afraid of dying? One of the interesting things about Vikings is that they've come to peace with dying early on, and if they die, they go to Valhalla, and they kind of, you know, it's everything they want. Whereas it's very different if you read the English sources of it. So with fear, you've always got two aspects of it. Yeah. It's like people bombing England in or you know, the Battle of Britain in the summer of 1940. We're afraid of being bombed or afraid of being invaded. What are the people out there? What are they afraid of? They're afraid of dying. They're afraid of being crippled. They're afraid of being caught. They're afraid of leaving their children fatherless. Whatever it might be. But the interesting one about the woman as well.
Yeah.
So they're afraid of their women being not running off. Is it? It's a bit more subtle than that.
Being taken. Yes.
You know, but they're afraid that the Vikings are going to be super attractive.
Yeah.
And that it will attract the women. So it'd be quite interesting to ask a nice an Anglo-Saxon woman, are you afraid of a Viking coming along to make you a wife?
Yeah.
Or not.
Very and that side of history is very difficult to sort of come by. You talk.
It's very different to like capture and rape and violence. They're afraid that these guys are going to turn up and be good looking and attractive.
Yes.
And you know, there's no mention of the kind of the violence that we associate with Vikings and women. It's really, really interesting article, though, isn't it?
Yes, very.
Staying on the Vikings, though, the Anglo-Saxon sources.
Yes.
So they are. There's a problem, isn't there, with a lot of the Anglo-Saxon sources who describe the Vikings as being particularly violent because they're not Christian.
Yeah, I mean, it's partly that, but it's also the Christian writers, so Alcuin, for example, Bede, and in the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle, it's written from a religious perspective, and they see the Vikings as a sort of an external force that basically represents divine punishment for all the ills that as Christians they see within society. So there's an awful lot of a lot of these early descriptions of Vikings are Christian polemic. Mm. And so they over, you know, yes, of course it must have been terrifying in Lindisfarne if descriptions are to be believed. It must have been terrifying, you know, what went on. And defenseless monks being slaughtered or whatever. But nonetheless, you know, these are isolated events and there is a lot of hyperbole about them.
But if you think about it as terms of the divine punishment, they're not actually just afraid of the Vikings. They're afraid of God.
Yes.
I mean, that gives you a sense of how properly frightened they are.
Yes, yes.
I've always been interested in this idea. As we talked a bit about privacy.
We talked about privacy and secrecy recently.
But fear is a private emotion, often. So those
collective fear?
Those Duchenne experiments we were talking about, they're very visible manifestations of fear. These people are absolutely terrified and you can see it. But fear doesn't work like that. So you can look completely unterrified. You can look very confident. It might be me about to go on to talk in front of 500 people. I'll be bricking it. But I'll
love an audience.
I'll look. You'd be still nervous or frightened, though, wouldn't you be? But it's to do with it being private.
Yeah.
And how private do you fear. How do you get at that as a historian if someone's not written about it?
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a question for the marketers listening. Want to find that perfect customer beyond the world of scrolling, swiping, and searching? Here's a secret to make sparks fly. Smooth talking with podcast ads. With Acast, you can reach millions of listeners who'll be hanging on your every word. On the train to work, in the gym, or waiting in line for coffee. Start up the conversation with podcast listeners anywhere and everywhere. And they're looking for love. 60% of listeners have a higher trust in brands they've met on podcasts compared to social. Get closer to your audience. Make podcast ads with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
It's very difficult. You might capture that sort of private experience in oral histories, for example. So there's a great BBC project around people's voices and World War II.
Yeah.
And I imagine if you searched certain search terms for that, if you were thinking about the Blitz, people's experience of the Blitz, I imagine at a later stage people would talk quite openly about the fear and their experience. I imagine, you know, likewise, all sorts of atrocities, you know, you can get that. I mean, the interesting thing would be to have if you think about the kinds of events in history where people must have been scared, a battle must be surely one of them.
Yep.
And you've got this sort of, on the outside, a soldier going over the top in World War One needs to be brave and fearless and, you know, in order to do his job properly. But nonetheless, there's that sort of private fear and emotion inside. Where is that located? Is that located in letters home? You know, as a letter writer, do you want, if you're writing home to your family, you're writing home to your mum, your wife, whatever, do you want to worry them? Do you tell them that you're, you know, terrified?
We can often see it in a shaking hand.
Yes.
In shaking handwriting.
Yes.
Which is whether it's anticipation of fear, it's something coming up, or it's something that's happened. It's the kind of the post process of it, and actually being able to deal with the fear. And that happens a lot in naval things as well.
Or fear of ghosts and ghoulies. Since this is Halloween, fear of the supernatural,
particularly fear of the invisible, because that's
fear of the invisible.
And things that are invisible, you know, were terrifying. That reminds me of our chapter on dust we wrote in our book.
Yes.
Ooh. Didn't someone chase down something in a sack? What was that?
Oh, God. Yes, that was cholera.
Yeah.
It was cholera. Yes. Incredible. Incredible story. So this northern Scottish village, and they saw this sort of cloud of dust coming towards them. So it's a sort of miasma cloud. And it was a time when you didn't really know how disease spread.
Yeah.
And so basically they thought that they were cholera spores. And so this one brave individual, not in fear, grabs a sack and goes off and swoops it over the cloud. And then the sack starts turning yellow. You know, what on earth they've got in it? I've no idea. And then they thought, oh my God, what's going to happen? They bury it.
Yeah.
And on top of it is a cholera stone.
It's interesting how much of fear of the invisible actually is the basis for a lot of fear. People need something tangible. They need something to understand.
Yeah.
Which, of course, is the very basis of history itself.
It is.
They need to, you can't look back in the past and go, that was important, but I don't understand it and I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
People need, there's a real historical need to understand what happened in the past. And I think people are often afraid of that.
Yes.
I was reading something about this happening in the aftermath of both the First and the Second World Wars. And it manifested itself in a lot of interesting ways in documentary making, in photography, is people trying to make sense of the world around them. But they'd been shocked into that by the horrors of the First World War, so many people dying, and it seemingly no one being in charge, and no one really knew what the hell was going on. And then the Second World War, with the Holocaust particularly, but also the scale of the war, and people looking to themselves and looking to the world around them in a completely new way, in a bid to understand what has just happened. Fear of the present and fear of the past.
Fear of the present and fear of the past. One of the things that struck me writing the Vikings book was the supernatural in there and the kind of the living dead, the sort of zombie-like figures, and how that connected to, in really interesting ways, to doors. And we came across something called the cadaver door or corpse door. And this is the idea that when somebody dies and they're laid out within the household, that you basically don't want the living dead to be able to find their way back into the household and I suppose haunt you. And so what you do is you cut a door in the wall. If it's a wooden house, you cut a hole in, If it's a brick house, you take bricks out, and then you take the corpse out that way rather than through the main threshold. Then they get buried, and then they can't find their way back, because what you've done before the funeral is over, you seal up that door. You either brick it up or you seal it up.
Yeah.
And I thought that was fascinating. Corpse doors.
Corpse doors are brilliant. And we've done an entire podcast on
We have on
zombies.
On zombies.
And it was one of our early ones. And monsters.
We hadn't done that. But the other thing was, it came up in a chapter in break-ins. So the idea is that you would break into a tomb of a dead warrior or whatever, and you would kill the dead corpse again. So to stop the corpse coming back, so you would plunge a spear or a sword into them.
Yeah,
fascinating.
To re-kill them, and
to re-kill them. Yeah,
yeah.
And their sagas are full of confrontations with zombies, including a farmer who was plagued by a group of zombies, and he decides that he's going to meet them all on the threshold of his farm by the door and stop them coming through.
The entryway.
And fights them. Yes. Hmm. Holds a court and then executes them. There, that's sort of Halloween-y, isn't it?
It's all very Halloween-y. It's just made me think of something. And yes, that's the point, the Vikings. So they're so frightened of their relationship with the gods and of things like zombies, that a lot of that is the explanation for the chucking stuff in rivers and lakes, the depositions that the Vikings do to appease the gods. They're so frightened of offending them that they have an entire kind of ritual world and process of keeping the gods on side, and that is purely down to fear. Hmm. And it's fear of them turning on you, which, you know, links us back to the poor people at Lindisfarne. You know, the monks there waiting to be attacked by the Vikings. They're frightened of the Vikings attacking, and they're frightened of their god taking vengeance on them. And remember when I said, you know, what are you early on, but what are you afraid of? The Vikings are afraid of the same thing happening. And they're all afraid of their god taking vengeance on them and then holding them responsible.
Yep.
Which is all to do with guilt, because they know they've done something wrong.
What links E.T., Walmart, apples and razor blades?
Vikings.
No. Halloween. Okay, so this is all about the reinvention of Halloween as in the 70s, the 70s and 80s. The film E.T. Comes out. There's the Halloween scene, and suddenly kids have these templates for how to dress up at Halloween and candy. I remember being, when I was born in the early 70s, ancient as I am, and I remember Halloween quite distinctly, but being quite terrified about it. Mm-hmm. And one of the stories that went around at the time was that there was this woman in the little town that I was, and she had a son who was unhappy, and in order to get back on the children in the village, mm-hmm. she would put razor blades in the apples. Whoa. So that when they'd come along trick or treat, they would take a bite. I'm sure it was an urban myth. But I think a lot of the, you know, for a long time, there were no real Halloween traditions in England.
No.
And that it was reinvented by, you know, Hollywood and American TV as it comes over onto our screens. And Walmart, you know, companies, American companies that were basically made a fortune out of selling candy.
Yeah.
When I lived in America, Halloween was big, big business. And I remember teaching at a university there, and a colleague saying that his kids, he would take them up to these halls of residence for students, and they would not have like a little bucket, but they would have pillowcases, and they would go around. You imagine that these student dorms were in basically like high-rise flats, and they would go around almost every door, mm-hmm. knocking on the door, trick-or-treating, and come away literally with a giant sack, like, you know, a meter by 50 centimeters worth of sack of candy.
Wow. There you go.
Are you dressing up for Halloween this year?
No, but that's another interesting theme, because the Halloween dressing up has changed.
Yes.
Like, I mean,
yes.
I have a daughter, and she was taking me through the Halloween outfit. Sexy witch. Sexy ghost. what is going on?
Zombie nurse.
Sexy zombie nurse.
Zombie nurse. Corpse bride.
Sexy corpse bride. It's very weird.
Do you carve pumpkins?
Occasionally. It's not a big thing.
I do it every year.
Yeah.
love it. Love it.
I want like to see what you do. See your scary.
I'll send you a photograph.
Very good. Thank you, everyone, for listening. That was our unexpected history of Halloween, which we've worn all over the place there. I really enjoyed that.
Be careful of apples at Halloween.
Be careful of apples, definitely. If you've liked what you've listened to, please check out the rest of our podcast. We've got over 90. We're desperate to decide on our 100th one. Can you get in touch with suggestions, actually? Is there a
centenary.
Centenary. We should probably do the unexpected history of anniversaries.
History of 100.
History of 100. Numbers? Or actually, just 100.
Yeah, okay. 100.
We'll do that. But we're also open to suggestions if anyone wants to get in touch.
Do let us know.
You can check out our book, Histories of the Unexpected. We're very proud of it. There are 30 different subjects. They all link to each other. You'll find out all sorts of things. It'll change the way you think about the past and the present. We guarantee that. And if you're lucky enough to live somewhere near where we're doing a talk, then come and see us live. We would love to see you. That's it for now. We'll see you soon.
Follow us on historiesoftheunexpected.com.
Yeah, and all social media through there.
Excellent.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.